This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with Mark Toulet, the founder and CEO of Sustainability Risk Advisors, to get his perspective on the Gulf oil spill and how it's affecting the sustainable investment community, and what positive steps he thinks may result from the tragedy that continues to worsen every day.
Nobody wants anything like this to happen. I think the upshot is to really kind of get embedded in our brains that as we invest in companies, you know, is this company treating our natural resources properly? Are they? And it creates this circle where companies improve to meet that, and investors respond by investing more in companies that have a better record than other. And you could take this kind of denial that we're having right now and turn it into a way to promote perpetual upgrades of environmental improvements. And I think that's what we need.
Our guest today on Sea Change Radio is Mark Toulet, the CEO of Sustainability Risk Advisors. Mark has also served as an advisor for Greenpeace, and he was the first program director for Ceres, which is an organization that sprung up from the Exxon Valdez disaster. Mark evaluates environmental issues for a large range of companies and investors. Welcome to Sea Change Radio, Mark.
Good afternoon.
Coming to us on via Skype from Washington, D.C. So you're working on a white paper for a client entitled Lessons Learned, Signals Missed, the Investor Response to the BP Oil Spill.
Yeah, I've been working on that for about 3 months now.
Why don't you share with our listeners what findings you're coming across that the average listener is not tuning into on CNN or reading about and on the internet?
Well, I think what I've heard is from the mainstream media is that BP is an aberration or an accident or an act of God. But really, if you look at the record of BP from its the Texas City refinery spill or explosion in 2006, followed by the Alaska pipeline spill, one can more paint the picture more realistically that this was not an accident or a aberration, but it was a predictable surprise. That if you looked at the history of BP's performance record in the area of environmental issues and social issues, meaning labor, human rights issues, they have underperformed. And frankly, they've been the most fined company in the United States for the last 3 years by far.
But BP actually was in the forefront not so long ago of the quote-unquote green movement within the industry.
Yeah, they were the first to try and use environmental issues as an area to kind of outperform their competitors. And this Beyond Petroleum campaign was a brilliant marketing campaign. It just, you know, they didn't live up to the hype. And at some point, kind of a green commitment became a greenwashing event. And I think it happened, it was accelerated by the transition when this former the CEO left and foot and mouth of Tony Hayward kind of came into power. And I think at that time, I think it accelerated this this pattern of kind of not investing in environmental health and safety. And if you talk to many environmental organizations, this is the point where they stop talking and engaging BP and view them as kind of greenwashing versus, you know, really trying to change the nature. In the beginning, actually, they made a very sizable, significant investment in renewables. And then as you saw over the course of the, you know, last 3 years, that investment kind of diminished and it became kind of vaporware.
The socially responsible investment community prides itself on trying to be at the forefront of what companies are doing to have the most sustainable practices and the greenest, most efficient businesses. Did they drop the ball largely on BP, Transocean, and the Halliburtons, or have they been ahead of the curve on this?
Well, I think it's a little of both. So that's kind of hedging answer. But I think first of all, the so-called socially responsible or sustainability movement, I think what that comes down to is applying some kind of values-based criteria to your stock selection for, you know, purposes. And in the U.S., it's bigger than most people think. It's about 10%. So all, you know, one out of $10 that's invested has some kind of sustainability or socially responsible optics to it. And so I think it's mixed results on that. Some SRI research firms and managers got it right. And I think they looked at the Texas City spill in 2005, explosion actually, where 15 people died. The company was fined more by OSHA, which is a government agency that finds, manages kind of health and safety risk, more than any other company in the U.S. ever. It was a record fine in 2005. And they looked at that and they said, this company is too risky to involve, to invest in. Others kind of looked at the kind of profits and looked at, frankly, the appreciation of the stock and kind of hedged a little bit, and some still own the stock. So I think some of them were ahead of the curve. Others, I think, learned a lot. I think this is a lesson learned for not just investors, but also sustainability investors, to look not just at kind of whether a company's in solar or whether they got a couple windmills, but what, you know, what are they doing to protect a disaster like this. And one example is, if you look, and one comparison is, I've looked at this comparing it to the Exxon Valdez spill to the BP spill, and there's interesting similarities. I mean, the Valdez spill, I think, could have been prevented, many think, by 80% if there was a double hull. Valdez had two hulls. It didn't. It was a single hull. And the same way, in the Deepwater rig, there was one blowout preventer, not two. So had, and that's not just an issue for BP, there's 65% of all wells in the Gulf do not have these two blowout preventers, kind of a fail-safe mechanism. So I think we need to pay more attention to safety. We need to not kind of try to juice another $1.1 billion and be, you know, okay with $1 billion in profits if we can prevent such a catastrophe. There is only so much oil in the ground. Sooner or later there won't be much around. Tell that to your kids while you're driving around downtown. There's only so much oil. Now back to more of our conversation with Mark Toole, the founder and CEO of Sustainability Risk Advisors. From an investor standpoint, it's pretty disheartening if you really want to put your money with a company that you believe in, because anything over a certain size, it's almost impossible to get a really good idea of what they're doing. I mean, you can only go by what they're telling you they're doing, unless it's a company that's under a couple hundred people and they're very focused on one or two products. But one of these multinational corporations that has many, many vertical industries that they're involved in, it's next to impossible to really gauge whether or not they're the good guys or not. Right. Yeah, I think, you know, both where they're operating matters and how big they are, what their market cap is, matters a lot. So I think you have to take that into context. And there's no, just like there's no perfect people, there's no perfect companies. And so I think there needs to be more research into how, you know, how is the sustainability performance of companies, environmental performance. There's one initiative that I worked on when I was at Sirius. It's called the Global Reporting Initiative, and most people haven't heard of that. But, you know, you would think that there would be some kind of standards around kind of rules about how what companies need to disclose about how they, you know, treat their workers and pay attention to the environment, there are none. So what's happened is something called the Global Reporting Initiative came out and really created a set of standards on and a new kind of elevated the requirements for reporting. So if generally speaking, the more sunshine you put onto the issues, the more disclosure, the better the performance. So one thing that people can do is look at, you know, what are the disclosures of a company? Do they produce, as you know, 3 out of 4 companies in this country now produce some sort of report that talks about what their environmental and social performance is. You know, you should ask, you know, do they produce a sustainability report? Have they followed these guidelines? There are certain questions that we can ask to you know, help. And I think, you know, steering companies to kind of disclose their performance is a great way to spur improvements and promote what's called the, you know, this virtuous cycle. So hopefully what happens out of this is investors, consumers demand, frankly, more attention to environmental protections. And it creates this circle where companies improve to meet that and investors respond by investing more in companies that have a better record than other. And you could take this kind of denial that we're having right now and turn it into a way to promote perpetual upgrades of environmental improvements. And I think that's what we need.
And the Exxon Valdez, a lot of people thought that one of the fallouts was going to be a real wake-up call for the oil and gas industry. And there have been some companies from that industry, from the oil and gas industry, that have embraced what you call a sustainability ethic. For example, Sunoco was a regional player in the oil and gas industry, right? When they made these efforts to embrace the sustainability movement almost 2 decades ago. But they were not in the too big to fail category, so to speak, right?
Right.
Even if it was Sunoco's oil spill, I mean, this is such an environmental disaster and politically toxic disaster that we're seeing that I don't think you'd see the kind of bailout that we just went through with the car companies and the banks.
One of the big problems, I think, one of the travesties in the BP spill is that $20 billion is tax deductible. So they should be paying taxes on this. That's $4 billion that taxpayers are subsidizing. You don't hear Republicans, you don't hear Democrats talking about that. But that's a loophole, I think, that needs to be fixed. And so, I mean, hopefully when we take these externalities, these kind of hidden costs, and we kind of pile it on the true cost, this gulf likely will not recover we want it to recover quickly. We pray that it does. But still in the Exxon Valdez, 21 years later, the herring stocks, the fishermen, many argue it still hasn't recovered. So the footprint of this spill is 10 times. I mean, this spill in the Gulf is releasing in 1 week what the Exxon Valdez release. So every week we go on, then it's the equivalent of another Exxon Valdez spill by some estimates.
Now back to our conversation with Mark Toulé, the founder and CEO of Sustainability Risk Advisors.
Smoke on the water, a fire in the sky. Smoke on the water.
The hope here is that the BP spill, you know, catalyzes these improvements in this kind of conscious consumption and conscious investing. So we look more than just what are the returns going to be in the next week, month, quarter, but is this the right company that I feel like I should own? So it's almost responsible ownership is what we're trying to get. We own companies just like we own a home and property. If we think about consumption, investing, as an extension of ownership. I think this is what this kind of radical transparency, sustainable ethic is trying to instill on people.
Here's an excerpt from Mark Tulay's recent article on the Deepwater Horizon oil spill in the Gulf entitled BP's Moment of Truth. When news of the Exxon Valdez oil spill broke in March of 1989, the slow and inadequate corporate and government response to the disaster ushered in a new wave of leaders in the environmental movement. One of these new visionary leaders was Joan Bavaria, the driving force behind the Boston-based Ceres, which was founded in 1989 to advance what was then viewed as a sweeping 10-point code of environmental conduct that became known as the Ceres Principles. In ancient Rome, Ceres was the goddess of agriculture, charged with guarding humankind's survival. In the wake of the Exxon Valdez disaster, Joan Bavaria and the Ceres team began to build a movement to do just that by creating a new way to hold companies to higher environmental performance and disclosure standards, and to provide market-based incentives to spur innovation and environmental leadership. On the wall of Bavaria's cluttered Boston office was a sign that read, "Life is a test. It's only a test. If this were your real life, you would have been given better instructions." She was put to the test in 1990 as she visited Prince William Sound on the first anniversary of the Valdez oil spill and wrote, "The extent of the damage is still disputed and probably will be forever, but one thing was crystal clear. Such disasters need not happen. They must not happen, and we must not let time heal this wound so well that we forget the tears, the tragedy, and bet again on luck to pull us through." This message rings as true today as it did then. While the tragedy of the Gulf oil spill itself cannot be undone, let's hope that BP is prepared to follow through on its original commitments and follow Bavaria's advice as it deals with the aftermath of cleanup and compensation. Let's get back to our conversation with Mark Tulay, the founder and CEO of Sustainability Risk Advisors. And while the Exxon Valdez occurred in some of our most pristine wildlife, it wasn't a place heavily populated like the Gulf Coast region is. I just heard about the Panama City International Airport, which is one of the first, I think it's the first international airport to open in many, many years in the U.S. And this is a airport and a region which is driven by tourism and beachgoers. You can just imagine how, even if the beaches are not as bad as we fear and expect, the image is going to be indelible on those potential tourist minds, right?
Absolutely. And I think we can't lose sight of the fact that with these disbursements, what they call that, we're, you know, helicopters and planes are going over the spill and putting chemicals on it. And what that does is that causes the oil to sink. And so Tony Hayward was incorrect, and it wouldn't be the first time, when he said that oil floats. Yes, oil does float, but not if you put on a chemical on it that makes it sink. So many kind of are likening the Exxon, the BP spill, as like an iceberg, because so much of this is sinking that we don't really see the total footprint and impact. And it might take, not months, but it'll take us years to assess this damage. And if this, it's already impacting not just the U.S. by the way, it's getting in the Gulf Stream, and it's already Cuba, Mexico. There's some talk of it kind of curling its way up the East Coast. I think that's very unlikely, but you know, the wealth in this country is around the coast. And if this, when this, and let's pray that it doesn't happen, kind of works its way up the East Coast, we're talking, this is already the worst environmental disaster ever, but this could be much worse than people think, even now, unfortunately.
Yeah, I read a pretty harrowing analysis by Matthew Simmons, the noted energy investor and author of Twilight in the Desert, which analyzes the Saudi oil fields, and I recommend that to our listeners who haven't read it. He did an interview with Fortune magazine where he talks about this hidden lake under the Gulf of just miles and miles of oil, which we can't even imagine. And it can't be seen from the satellite images that are coming onto our TV screens a lot.
You know, one of the quotes I've looked at as I've been writing and talking about this, Jacques Cousteau kind of talks about the kind of our bipolar kind of if you will, views on the ocean. In some ways, you know, all of us can remember a time of real joy walking, you know, with our families on the beach. So, you know, he said the sea, once it casts its spell, holds one in its net of wonders forever. And I think that's true. The other piece of it is he said the seas are universal sewer. So we need to pay attention to kind of how we treat our oceans. I mean, we know more about the moon than we know about the bottom of our ocean by far. And it's been underexplored, under-resourced. We're depleting fish stocks. And I think this is why this, if we can come out of this with a true kind of multi-dimensional sustainability consciousness, then we would look, we wouldn't ask, you know, we wouldn't just ask what, you know, what is the GDP of, or how much, you know, what is the profits out of the ocean? But we'd ask, you know, are we taking too much fish out? you know, and what's going to happen 5 years and 10 years by taking this kind of longer view and, you know, not assuming that we'll have what we have today, tomorrow. I think this is, I think this will be an important kind of outcome of this. And, you know, while we don't, you know, nobody wants anything like this to happen, I think the upshot is to really kind of get embedded in our brains that as we invest in companies, you know, is this company treating our natural resources properly? Are they? You know, what are they, you know, what are they doing? How are they managing these risks? And I think these are new questions that haven't been asked since the 19, you know, never been asked. And so since the Industrial Revolution. So we're really in a different way of looking at how we value companies and how we look at risk.
I'm in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico, working on a fishing boat, or how long, I don't know. Trouble behind me, yes, I'm hoping so. Finger on my back, make me say, whoa, whoa, whoa.
We're talking with Mark Toole, the CEO of Sustainability Risk Advisors on Sea Change Radio. So, Mark, let's turn to one of the key hot potatoes that's being discussed right now, the moratorium on deep water drilling. The argument against it is all you need is one, and the argument to stop the moratorium is that these jobs are more important than making sure everything is perfect and nothing will ever be perfect. What side of this argument do you come out on?
I don't think the moratorium helps. I think it's kind of a, you know, it's a gesture, just like getting rid of Tony Hayward, which while it's going to happen probably by the fall, doesn't solve the cultural problems at BP. I mean, there's board culpability mostly, not just Tony Hayward, and stopping the moratorium doesn't solve our energy crisis. Doesn't, you know, push us closer to a clean energy future. And I don't, you know, really, like I said before, two thirds of these wells don't have this extra kind of blowout preventer safety. So in 6 months, you know, if they can get that extra safety engineered, which I don't think is possible, then it's a good idea. But I think it's doing more harm than good. I don't see the benefit. I think it's more of a political gesture. I think we need to look longer out and not focus on this moratorium, which doesn't, you know, just makes people feel angry. It doesn't, I don't see the long-term benefit of that.
I'm also struck how the American public can look at the entire U.S. coastline as a not in my backyard kind of issue. I mean, if they're worried about the jobs leaving because these oil rigs, if they're left fallow because of the moratorium, they will be moved to another place where those risks will be just the same, but it will be somebody else's problem. An oil spill in Colombia or Nigeria will impact us in other ways.
Right. And you know, a good point about Nigeria. I mean, Nigeria has been a environmental degradation there is systemic, and it's, you know, it's having the equivalent of a Gulf oil spill on a regular basis. So we need to kind of look at this kind of globally, I think. And I don't think conservation or environmental responsibility should be a left issue or a right issue. If this issue becomes kind of a liberal issue or defined as a political issue, and that would be a tragic mistake. It really should be beyond that, looking, you know, how do we create a sustainable world which is actually more secure, safe, less terrorism, you know, global security. All these issues need to come into play here.
Keep sticking with the moratorium issue. How do we take the make a measured response and go in, and how long would it take to make these 4,200 oil rigs meet higher standards and have the right acoustic shutoff switches, et cetera?
It won't take as long as we think. I mean, if you think about what we did in World War II, you know, we kind of redeployed the whole economy basically to more quickly than anyone thought, and to make it so that we could defeat an enemy. And I think our enemy right now is not a country. It's not terrorism. It's our global security, and our future depends on whether we can sustain and take care of our planet properly. If we can't, then, you know, it won't matter how many TVs we have, etc. And so we shouldn't look at the politics of whether Obama responded quickly enough, or whether, you know, he came out hard or swinging hard enough at BP. We should take the long view here and use this as a way to accelerate the transition to a renewable future, a clean energy future, so that, you know, we can be competitive with the Chinese and others that are racing to create the new green economy. And so let's use this to push, forget, you know, criticizing Obama about this. Let's look forward and push meaningful climate change resolution where we're taxing the things that are harmful. And I think that's okay, because if we don't tax it, we're subsidizing it. So I think we need to kind of look beyond that and help use this to get meaningful legislation. It's a very similar circumstance to, you know, Nixon when he back to, you know, created the EPA. There was a political opportunity there and he created the EPA. I think this is Obama's moment to kind of create meaningful policy around environmental and climate change issues and have this be his legacy of changing and improving the way we invest in renewables.
Well, Mark Toole, CEO of Sustainability Risk Advisors, I'm sorry we have to talk to you because of something like this, but you have a lot of insight that we all appreciate you providing us. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our theme music is by Sanford Lewis. Additional music by Jimmy Smith, Ricky Skaggs, and Bruce Hornsby, Tower of Power, Deep Purple, and Alex Wise. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.